Il s'allume. If we get to the fourth ring. Oh!
Go ahead.
We were getting to the fourth ring. I said he's not going to pick up. Joining me.
Oh, no. I'm here. I was going through airport security.
Oh,
so,
no kidding.
Yeah. Did a little flying today.
Nice. Joining me is our F-18, our fighter pilot guy. F-18 is one of the platforms that he flew. Kurt Knowles, retired Lieutenant Colonel, United States Marine Corps. And going to go do a little flying today. You fired up to do a little flying or what?
Well, I'm always fired up to get in the air. You know how it is. It's like you guys handing you a weapon. We'll still do some shooting. You know what I mean? So, yeah, things are good.
All right. Talk to us about being on approach. I don't know if you've read anything about the crash in Key West. F-18, two-seater, Foxtrot version. But now anytime I see an F-18 involved in something like this, your stomach just goes into a knot, given all the issues, right, relative to maintenance and spare parts and whatnot. But according to eyewitnesses, the aircraft went vertical. There was a fireball, and they ejected evidently after the aircraft had rolled. Can you walk us through the approach and what happens if you lose an engine on approach?
Sure. I mean, when you're on an approach and we call it being stabilized, so you're in a landing configuration, that's typically 5 miles out from the airport, your approach speed, you're stabilized, you're using your instruments to guide you to the runway if the weather's, you know, low enough for the military down to 200 feet above the ground is about the minimum so that they can come into an airport. So the, you know, it's kind of like how's the weather and in Key West, it can get some overcast, but typically nothing below, I would say, like 1,000 feet AGL. But you can come all the way down to about 200,
okay.
Which it might feel high, 200 feet, but that's usually probably about 5 seconds to touchdown. You know what I mean? So, I mean, there's times where 200 feet, you're making a decision and, you know, flying MD-11s, you actually initiate a go around. Like the airplane's still going to be settling. You might even actually, you know, get close to touching your wheels to the runway if even as you're going around, if that makes sense. But of course, with the F-18 and the thrust to weight ratio, it's not going to happen. But, so here you are stabilized about 5 miles out, and if something goes wrong, like losing an engine, typically we're going to go missed approach, and we're going to go around, and we're going to figure out what's going on so that we can now get re-stabilized again, single engine. So if you're single engine or two engines, it changes drastically how you're going to configure the airplane with your flaps. How are you going to fly your speeds? Those type of things, because your single engine approach is a much different type of approach than a normal two engine approach. So you go around and execute the missed approach, and you're going to, you'll go around and execute the missed approach, and you will basically then start troubleshooting. Like, first of all, what's the health of the airplane? What's going on? Is it an engine fire? Is it an engine failure? Precaution or shutdown procedures need to be initiated, whatever the case may be. And then how are we going to come back in? And, you know, some guys would even argue to say is if you were coming into an airport and it was an airport that didn't have a good instrument approach, but there's another one nearby that had a better one or a longer runway, that might be a more safer option, and they'll divert to a, you know, a safer field. So, you know, I use the example of if you were flying to Palomar Field in Carlsbad, that runway is 4,900 feet, right? It's like 4,910. So it's less than 5,000 feet, which is pretty short. If I had an issue going into there where I don't want to run out of concrete when I land, well, maybe it makes better sense to divert and go down to San Diego. Now you got 8,000 feet Or if I was in the military, I'd go over to Miramar where you've got 12,000 feet. So that's the kind of decisions that you're making. In this case, if you're on approach and you have a engine failure, engine fire, I would go around and then assess what's going on with the airplane and troubleshoot and then come back in.
All right, so the engine fire or losing an engine, is it a common occurrence? Is it not common?
We practice.
Okay.
I would say it's not so much that it's common, but we practice to it in our training so that we feel very comfortable to where if it happens, everything's going to be fine. Everything's going to be fine. Okay. So, in most aircraft, except, you know, kind of your light civil airplanes or light general aviation airplanes, all these airplanes are certified to fly single engine.
Okay. All right. So, the quote from the eyewitness is, the wings went vertical, there was a fireball, and it literally dropped out of the sky. So losing an engine would be fairly typical, not fairly typical, but something you would handle relatively easily, even on final approach going that slow?
Yes. You just add power on the other engine and you would just initiate a single engine go around. Yeah, absolutely. It's not that big a deal. Now, if he's, you know, eyewitnesses are eyewitnesses and they, you know, everybody has their own point of view, but the thing about something like the F-18 where you have a computerized flight control system where, you know, most airplanes
Let me stop you. Who's flying the airplane at that point? Are you flying it or is the airplane flying itself?
In an F-18, typically the pilot's going to be flying it.
Okay.
If you're bad weather coming in and you're flying on American Airlines today, the autopilot's got it.
Okay.
And the pilot's going to click off the autopilot right before landing. Usually about 200 feet is where I usually clicked it off at. And you bring it in. And actually, if it's real low weather, these airplanes that are flying American, you know, Alaska, FedEx, whatever the case may be, they can fly what's called Cat 2, Cat 3 approaches where you can literally couple the autopilot all the way down to the runway. I mean, it will land. It will even auto brake. It will, when it touches down, the brakes will apply automatically.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's a very, very safe and stable and an extremely automated system. That was your pilot. You're cross checking constantly to make sure that the system integrity is maintained. But military airplanes do not have that certification because there's not a reason to pay that money for that. And now you have to stay proficient with it. You have to stay, make sure the equipment's up to, you know, to regs. It's just not worth our investment. So the pilots fly, you know, most of those approaches down all the way in. That's just what we do. So,
okay.
For the military. So he was hand flying that.
Okay. Email question. What if they were already on single engine?
That's fine. He had made adjustments already on his flap configuration. He had made adjustments on his speeds. Whether or not he needed, you know, an F-18, he can dump fuel. So he could have lowered his weight by adjusting his fuel. And now he's in a stabilized approach, what we call a single engine approach. And it's, to be honest with you, there really isn't that big a difference. Like you just got a little less thrust and you're up on the power a little more on the one side of the throttle. And it's the single engine go around that can get kind of sporty because as you're adding a lot of thrust to go around, you know, when we say go around, it's like basically you're unable to land. So you're doing a takeoff from the runway. We call it a go around on this approach. As you're adding that thrust, you've got to make sure you're countering the asymmetric yaw so that the airplane doesn't become unstable as you're adding that thrust in the go. But on an approach, to be honest with you, single engine approaches are pretty easy. Like they're not that big a deal. And he's already made the adjustments coming in, whether it's weight, what flap configuration and speeds. Now, when the eyewitness is saying that the airplane pitched vertical, with the computerized flight control system of the F-18, something might have happened or it caused, did the fire, you know, and the plane caused damage to the computer system, and now it caused, you know, flight control deflection. I mean, we just don't know. That's one like we've talked about.
Where the hell does the fireball come from?
Well, your entire turbine part of the airplane, the turbine and the engine, is all you know, fire burning inside your you know, we call it the hot section of the engine. So your power section is kind of up front, the front part of the motor, and then the center part of the engine is basically the burn portion where you're basically burning an internal fire. That's how a turbine works, right? So we used to dumb it down so easy. It's like basically suck, burn, blow, spit, right? So it's like it sucks in the air in the front. It lights on fire with ignition and fuel and air, because, you know, fire needs three sources, right? It needs fuel, it needs air, and it needs some type of ignition. So it sucks in the air, it injects fuel and spark, it catches on fire, then as it blows out the back, right, that's, it exhausts that, and that causes the turbine's blades to spin. And as those turbine's blades spin, it's also spinning it's connected to the front portion of the engine, and it's causing it to give it thrust. So, jet engines aren't generating thrust. Turbofan jet engines aren't generating thrust because of the exhaust. That's very minimal there. What they're generating thrust with is the front part of the engine. Now, what the F-18 has though, and fighter jets have, is afterburner. So you've got an enormous fuel slinger in the back of the engine that will inject raw fuel back there that will then, it has a, basically, if you consider like a secondary ignition, that gives you about a 30% boost in thrust, right? So the problem is the cost is fuel. Like it burns fuel. When you're injecting all this raw fuel in there, it's not fuel efficient. Like you will burn a lot of fuel. So there's really, if you look at an F-18's engine, there's two portions that there's a lot of fire. In the center portion of the engine, which is normal on every jet engine out there, whether you're flying Southwest or American today, or if you're flying in a fighter. And then in a fighter jet, you have the aft portion, afterburner. So that's kind of two portions of the GE engines. They have fire sources.
So
you've got a lot of fuel and a lot of fuel lines running around, and, you know, so if there's a ruptured fuel line, you know, something like that, that could cause a fire, you know. So
okay, so if you're on single engine final approach and you have some kind of catastrophic event, and that's where the fireball comes from, are you screwed at that point?
No, if you have thrust, right, so the engine's going to say engine fire left or whatever, and you initiate your procedures, right, but if you have thrust in close, you're not, what I would say, screwed in a way that you're single engine out, and now the other engine fails. Is that basically what you're asking me?
Correct.
Okay. If the engine's still producing thrust, you would be able to manipulate the plane in a way of like steering, you know, towards a non-populated area, or maybe you're even in close well enough to the runway that you would just land and then do an immediate shutdown. You know, you'd have to make that assessment real time. If the airplane, what sounds like, goes into uncontrolled flight, where all of a sudden it pitches drastically or, you know, something like that, then you would have to, you know, eject. The thing about when this eyewitness says the airplane pitched up, right? So if I would say that my, you know, cheap seat assessment is it didn't stall. And when I say stall is it didn't stop flying, where he got slow and he stopped flying the airplane. Cause when you stall, it pitches down. Right. So now he could have been, you know, the eyewitness might have not seen it correctly, but the only thing is if they had gotten slow and they stalled, right? But I don't think that would happen. There's,
these pilots are too trained and proficient to do that. That's pretty basic stuff, the stall and final approach. I don't think that would have happened. But more likely is the fire or whatever failure occurred caused some type of damage that, you know, something jeopardized the flight controls is what I would probably start to look at. But then, you know, like we always talk about, they'll figure out the why, they'll dive into it, they'll recover the airplane, they'll figure out. The nice thing about the F-35 or the F-18F, it's a brand new plane, right? So it's going to have all the latest and greatest, you know, flanking data recorders, and, you know, they'll be able to assess exactly what happened on this mishap.
All right. So, but bottom line is, I think you and I were talking about, do you remember the F-18? No, it was the F-16 that lost. It's a single engine, yes?
Yeah, yeah.
And it was the pilot ejected. It was in Colorado, and you were kind of walking through, you know, how long you would have to make a decision before you ejected. And you said, look, at this point, when you get catastrophic failure, you're essentially riding a metal dart.
That's exactly right.
And you have seconds. Exactly right. So when you're riding a slow metal dart like that, I mean, with that kind of proximity to the ground.
2 seconds.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's quicker than tap rack bang. You know what I mean? It's like you're stable. All of a sudden the airplane drastically pitches. I mean, you don't delay. Like you just pull because you're not going to be able to recover it. Now, if you're at high altitude, you have what's called potential energy, right? You have airspace between you. But when you're down low, you have no potential energy. And if you just lost all your kinetic energy, i.e. your forward movement, and the airplane stops flying, you don't delay. You don't delay.
Okay. Could you walk us through what happens during an ejection? Is the canopy designed to go one direction and you another? What is the choreography of that?
So, the design of the more up-to-date seats are, you know, back in the day we had watched Top Gun, the handles were above your head.
Right.
What they found is that you had significant flail injuries where guys were breaking their arms, breaking their legs, and all that kind of stuff. When you snap into an ejection seat, they're called garters. They're little ankle, not little, I should say, they're basically ankle straps you put around your ankles, and they're tied to a tether. And then your handle is between your legs, right? So when you're trained to eject, you put both hands on the handle between your legs, right about your crotch, and you pull, and you never let go of the handle, right? Now your arms and your hands are sucked in tight to your body, and those tethers, those ankle straps, they basically pull tight to where if you're sitting in the chair, you're ankles go to the right next to the legs of the chair, right? It's like they're just gonna snap in. So now your legs stay tight to the seat. Does that make sense?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
So now as you pull, I think there's basically three things that happen within, you know, what you and I would assess is happens in like all at the same time, but they're actually happening in sequence, right? The first thing is the canopy blows off, right? And the way that the United States designs their canopies is it blows back, right? So it the front portion blows off and it comes up like a clamshell. They call it a clamshell design. So that blows off first. In the UK's planes, like with the Navy Marine Corps flies, the T-45, they actually have deck cord laid inside of the canopy it just shatters it. So it'd be like the same thing if you take a sledgehammer to the windshield of your car, right?
Wow.
It just shatters it. Yeah. So, and that's the way the Harrier is, right? Because the Harrier is a UK-made plane.
Right.
So you have two philosophies. Do you do the clamshell design or do you do the deck core design? Well, the UK took the deck core design and the US took the clamshell design. So first thing in this case of F-18, the clamshell, the canopy blows off. Then there's the old seats used to just blow you out of it. And they found like the immediate G forces were injuring the pilots to where, you know, probably some of them never flew again. So what they do is this two-stage release. So the initial firing of the seat, it's a two-stage rocket where it basically starts to get you away from the airplane and get your movement going. And then the second stage is where it really blows you away, 1,000 feet. I don't know how far away, but significantly away from the airplane. So it's got like a two-stage rocket that you're sitting on underneath there. And you just basically, the first stage rides up the rails and the second stage, boom. So it's kind of like a small motor, then it followed, by a huge motor that just blows you. You're riding a rocket, right? Once the seat blows away, depending on the altitude, the seats are smart enough where they know if you're at high altitude, it actually doesn't, deploy the chute. Because they know you'll get hypoxic. So let's say you're like 30,000 feet, right? Yeah. So you actually, as crazy as it is, it free falls you back down to a safe altitude, like 15,000. And then the chute deploys, right? At low altitude, the seat's smart enough to go, hey, the chute immediately deploys, right? So the moment the rocket's done firing away from the plane, simultaneously that chute is opening. Right, so then you'll hear the guys at low altitude say, yeah, I got one swing in the chute, and I hit the ground. It's like, yep. So when that chute opens, then the seat actually falls away from you. So you're strapped actually you're automatically in your harness inside that seat, and that seat goes away, and you're in your parachute now. So there's like all these different things are happening, but they're not simultaneous. They're on steps, right? So the first thing is, the canopy blows off. The next thing is the first stage rocket kicks off. The third thing is the second stage rocket kicks, so it's blowing you away from the airplane. The fourth thing is your arms, your hands are all tight against your body, and the seat's assessing how high you are, right? And then it's assessing, do I deploy the chute or not? If the chute deploys, the seat falls away, and you fall on the chute. If it assesses you're too high, you stay in your seat, and then once the seat assesses that you're at a lower altitude, then the seat falls away, and your chute opens, right? When the chute opens, that's what pulls you away from the seat. So it's pretty complex.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Okay, when you're in that...
And here's the other thing. Here's the other thing, too, Mac, is like today, the one that happened to F, the backseater... I believe the back seater goes first, and then the second seater. They don't go simultaneously.
Dang.
So that's another. Yeah, and the two seaters is even more complex. The seats fire at different sequences.
So if the aircraft pitches, so if there's some kind of catastrophic event on board, and you're with one engine, and or hell, you could be with two engines, and if a catastrophic event pitches this thing, to go nose up.
Yep.
Is there any angle when you're in that proximity at the ground that you have to be or beyond which that you're going to have problems surviving the ejection?
Well, yeah, so it's funny you ask that. It's like it really depends on what surface you're above, right? If you're above concrete or a runway, it could be a major factor on how close you are. And these seats will fire with the airplane inverted, no problem, right? I know a guy that did it. Luckily, he was over water. Right. So he got one swing in the chute and splash. Right. And I shook his hand about 20 minutes later. Pretty amazing.
Wow.
The thing is, if you're over land though, right, and you fire upside down, it might be blowing you into the ground. Right. Right? So it could be really a much different risk factor, but you, as in the pilot, you don't have time to make that assessment. The moment it's out of control, you just pull, right? It's just an uncontrollable pull. It's like I can't. And the thing about two-seater is the back-seater or the front-seater can initiate it, right? So then it's funny how you learn these things the hard way. Is funny and not in a ha-ha, but an ironic way. They have a selector now where, like, let's say you're given a news media ride in the back seat. You can actually select to where the back seater cannot initiate, right? Because they've had it to where students or people thought that they were going to crash and they pulled the ejection handle.
Wow.
And essentially, that's happened, right? So they now have made this new, it's a big yellow T handle
that you can select is, can both initiate, can only the front seater initiate, you know what I mean? So, but in this case, if it's two, you know, two rated pilots that are, you know, a front seater and a back seater, I'd say a pilot and an NFO, they're, it's set for both. So either one of them could initiate that injection, right? Either one of them.
Right. Right. The, my guest this morning is Kurt Knowles. And do you got to go?
Yeah, we're going to walk to the plane here. So,
okay.
Hey, how more fitting is that? You're talking to a pilot who's at the airport.
The, no, first of all, I always appreciate you explaining things. So the bottom line is on that approach, whether it had one engine or two, probably not. Well, if it only had one engine, it's significant. But really, something catastrophic by virtue of the flame happens and the aircraft reacts to it. And then the only thing, if it's that determination, probably, you know, quickly, I'm out of control, I pull, I eject. But if the angle of the ejection is such that it fires you into the water at that altitude, what's any idea what speed you're going when you launch out of the aircraft?
On an approach, or, I mean, I know guys have ejected like 400 knots.
Wow. Wow.
But I mean, on an approach, you're doing about $150, about 150, 130.
Okay. And then that's accelerated by the booster in the seat because you're in proximity.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know what the feet per second, you know, travel is on an ACC ejection seat, but I know it's like, I think it's like 12 G's is what you, looking
wow.
acceleration out of the, yeah, it's like, I think it's like 10 to 12 G's is how fast it's
okay.
pulling,
so if
pushing
you're,
you out of the plane.
So if you're at the wrong angle in proximity to the ground, that's not a good thing.
It could be real dangerous. It could
okay.
be real dangerous.
All right. One final question, if you can answer it in 60 or 120 seconds so you can go. How the hell did Gary Powers survive being shot out of a U-2? At that altitude. I saw that. I don't know what show I was watching. It's a Tom Hanks movie about prisoner exchanges in the Cold War. And Rudolph.
Well, remember, they're in a, basically a spacesuit, right?
Right.
So he's probably had some type of, you know, self-sustaining oxygen system in that seat, which is what we have in our seat, to be honest with you, Mac. Like, you stay connected to just an auxiliary oxygen bottle underneath that seat. So if you eject at high altitude, you're still breathing oxygen. Isn't that crazy?
Ejected at what? How many thousand feet would Gary Powers have been at in the U-2 when he got shot out of the sky over
Russia? like 60,000 or something like that. Yeah.
So he gets shot out of that aircraft at 60,000 feet. How long does that take to get to the ground? Like a half hour?
Oh, looks like we're boarding, heading for the plane.
All right.
Yeah. No, it could definitely. I mean, you're probably only going, you're probably falling about 2,000 feet per minute. Yeah, yeah, it's like 20 minutes. Oh, man.
I saw that and I thought, what is the probability that you would survive a surface to air missile hitting your U-2 at 70,000 feet and then survive the parachute event? Crazy, right?
Crazy. All right, my friend. I'll talk to you later. Thanks for having me on.
No. Travel safe and always appreciate your expertise in all this. Thank you. All right, bud. Later.
All right, see you.
That is Rudy. Air officer, Regimental Combat Team 1, personal friend of mine. He's probably about 2 miles from me right now. Borrowed my ladder a week ago, brought her back a week later. And then came over for lunch, and I made him vegetarian tacos. Yeah, he liked it, too. Yeah, Montana man said, hey, how was it? He said, it was good. And then Montana man, he wouldn't believe in it. The, Yeah, again, we try not to speculate too much, but just try to kind of kick around what is in the public realm. But you can see the dynamic nature of that event, right? So whether you're on one or two engines, the fire thing is, I mean, for instance, if you're on one engine, just to extrapolate on what Kurt said, and you had a problem, right, the aircraft becomes a dart, but it's still flying, right? You lose the engine, but nothing catastrophic's happened. It's a metal dart. You would eject as long as you're level, right? You got a shot. You know, as he said, maybe you'll get one swing in the chute because you're in proximity. But when, yeah, depending on the angle that you eject at, not good. Ohio man. I think the witness statement is confusing the issue. The wings went vertical implies to me that the plane started to roll. I don't think it ever pitched up. Yeah, I don't know. So if they went vertical, they go from horizontal to vertical. So do they go nose up or do they go onto the side? And, you know, we don't know. If it goes nose up, well, either way, it's not an optimum situation for ejecting. You know, because if it's vertical, you know, then you're essentially being ejected horizontally to the water at that speed. What do you say, pulling 12 Gs? And the impact, you know, is not going to be favorable. And if it's on its side, you're essentially being, you know, fired out at the same angle, just in a different direction from the aircraft. So, again, keep those families in your thoughts and prayers. As again, attempt to explain the another email. Hey Mac, any word on why the aircraft went down? Yeah, the initial reports are is at a power line in Iraq. So, at night there was two aircrafts in the flight, Black Hawks, and QRF launched immediately, got there, and to recover everybody, all seven on board were killed, and initial report is that it was a power line. We'll take a quick break. More of All Marine Radio coming up. There's a few more stories we'll check as we get going today. And more of All Marine Radio on a Friday coming up next right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.